If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. I am Steve Hook. It's good to be with you again. Here's hoping you had a big weekend. But a new week is upon us, and we have got a great show for you lined up today. I've got a good guest today, Eric Jackson. Eric Jackson is a former big-time executive with big tech. In fact, he worked with Elon Musk at PayPal. He was the executive marketing director there, made probably bucket loads of cash. But he's got a new book out called PayPal Wars, Battles with eBay, the Media, the Mafia, and the Rest of Planet Earth. That's a mouthful, and it's a pretty big claim, but we're going to chat with Eric about everything. And, of course, this is pretty timely, too, given the fact that the U.S. federal government is now going after Elon Musk. Imagine that. Weird how they don't go after Zucker Turd or Bezos. Those two, of course, are massive, massive Democrat donors. They're never going to get touched. But Elon Musk had the temerity to go censor free on X, formerly Twitter. And that apparently has invited the wrath of the U.S. federal government. They are now suing Elon Musk's SpaceX in particular, because SpaceX, you know, being as they're a tech company and a very important one to national security, but they're not hiring illegal immigrants and they're not hiring refugees. And that's a problem for the federal government. Now, forget the fact that NASA does not hire illegals and does not hire refugees or quote unquote asylum seekers. Elon Musk says, well, I'm going to follow the same pattern that NASA does, because after all, the equipment and the tech that we're dealing with here is absolutely in the vital interest of America's national interest. And it probably wouldn't be good to find some, Chinese foreign national that just walked across the southern border and put them in a position of power where they could, maybe steal our tech. Not that China has ever done that before, but there is a chance. So I'm interested in seeing what Eric Jackson has to say about that lawsuit. That lawsuit is just about everything else that this government does now seems to be very, very authoritarian, tyrannical. And if you're not with us, you know, do you remember when Bush said years ago, if you're not on our side, you're our enemy or something? I'm paraphrasing, but it was roughly that. You're either with us or against us. Well, that seems to be the Biden mantra for everything. If you do not completely support this doddering old moron, then we're going to come after you and we're going to use the full weight of the law to go after you. And that's what's happening to Elon Musk and SpaceX right now. So I'm sure Eric will have something to say about that. We'll also chat about AI, the government coercion, regulation, and all this stuff with big tech. Cryptocurrency, there's a scary proposition, right? And Peter Thiel, of course, is one big tech exec that seems to be a little bit more conservative, certainly more Republican leaning than others, but he may have his own issues. So we'll chat with Eric about all of that. So big, big show and a great way to get it started this week. Hope you're doing well. Well, what else is going on? What did we learn this weekend? Well, we learned that Devin Archer had a secret meeting with then Secretary of State John Kerry. And this is, I think that as more dribs and drabs of just how corrupt this DOJ is and this administration is with regards to anything involving Biden corruption, I won't call it a Hunter Biden scandal anymore because it's not, it's a Joe Biden scandal. But anybody that's getting anywhere near that is coming under political heat, the likes of which we've never seen in this country, because we've never had an authoritarian tyrant like we do now in office. So that's what's happening there. So the question is, what was that email all about? Well, apparently they met. We don't know what the meeting was all about, but we do know that less than a week later, Viktor Shokin was fired by Poroshenko. Poroshenko, of course, was the former president of Ukraine that was kind of placed in there by the U.S. to begin with. And then Biden went over there famously, infamously, and said, you either fire the prosecutor or you're not getting the $1 billion. Poroshenko kind of said, oh, wait a minute, you don't have that authority. That's the president. Biden said, oh, yeah, call him. And now that's important. Oh, yeah, call him. Why is that important? Because it means that it wasn't just Biden's call. Now, we do know now that the State Department specifically said Viktor Shokin is doing a fine job. He's doing a good job. He seems to be cracking down on corruption. But once Viktor Shokin zeroed in on Burisma, guess what? All of a sudden, he was a problem. He wasn't dealing with actual corruption, and he had to be fired. And Kerry was involved in this too. I have no doubt that Obama was. And I would wager that as we get back from this August recess, or as the Congress and the Senate get back from their August recess, we will see an impeachment inquiry the first week they're back. And if not, Kevin McCarthy is going to be looking for a new gig, I would wager. But I think that's going to happen. When it does, that opens all kinds of legal avenues that the Congress can pursue, namely getting bank records. Getting bank records and seeing exactly where the money is, where it went to. You'll recall Biden almost dared reporters, oh yeah, where's the money? Where's the money? Find the money. And they, of course, behind the backs, they were joking about all of this. There's a reason there's over 20 LLCs in Joe and Jill Biden's names, because they were moving money around. So Viktor Shokin, of course, gave that great interview. Brian Kilmeade interviewed him at Fox News. And he basically said, look, I don't like to talk in conjecture, but if I had to guess, and I'm paraphrasing, if I had to guess, yes, I was fired because I was investigating Burisma and Hunter Biden and Devin Archer and everybody else that was on that board. And everybody else that was on that board is very key, because it does cross over party lines. This is why some of these Never Trumpers, hello, Mitt Romney, hello, Mitch McConnell, this is why they don't want to go anywhere near this, because some of them are as dirty as Joe Biden is, and they would rather destroy Donald Trump than ever have to answer for any of the crap that they pulled. And so it's going to be very, very interesting when we get back from this August recess, this summer recess, to see how it plays out. But we'll follow that along closely. Anyway, glad you could be a part of it today. Hey, at TNT Radio, we never, ever go home. Yeah, we just had a weekend off, but guess what? TNT didn't take the weekend off, because we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, 365, online globally, no matter what, no matter where. We've got you covered at TNT Radio.
Stay updated on everything you need to know.
They keep me up to date.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, let's bring our buddy in, Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Well, it comes as absolutely no shock. It's no shock whatsoever. The U.S. Department of Energy, DOE, has proposed new rules that would impose energy efficiency standards on ceiling fans, following similar restrictions unveiled against other household appliances like gas stoves, portable gas generators, and the like. Here with the story, joining me now, TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Ruckus, shockingly, it looks like the government wants to get into everybody's business about everything all the time, whenever, wherever, kind of, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it sure would seem that some people are not a big fan of this new rule. Sorry, I had to try to drop some sort of pun here. So, we're now targeting ceiling fans, apparently. At least that's the way the conservative news is spinning this, making it sound as if Biden's administration is literally targeting all of these things. But his actions speak louder than words sometimes, which is good, because you heard some of the words Biden says. Now we're targeting the ceiling fans. This is sparking some pushback from manufacturers and Republicans. The Department of Energy is defending its position. The DOA says this is going to save household energy, save Americans money. Wait till you hear how much money it's going to save everybody. You're going to laugh. And then, of course, everyone's like, how dare you? You went after our light bulbs, our gas stoves. You're going after air conditioners, toilets. Everything. You know?
Toilets, too.
Toilets, thank you. All right, like everything that basically makes everybody's lives, like, you know, doable, because otherwise it would be miserable and or deadly, especially when it comes to like heaters and air conditioners, right? So this is a rule by the DOA. It was proposed in June. It would require ceiling fans to become more energy efficient. The agency estimates that consumers using a standard fan could save up to $39.84 over the lifespan of the appliance. Wow. A ceiling fan typically lasts for around 6 to 10 years. So you start doing the math and you're like, wow, that's not a lot of money. Around 85 million American households are estimated to use at least one ceiling fan, with a quarter using four or more. I think I got like four in my own house. Ceiling fans have always been considered a cheap and easy alternative to air conditioners. Nonetheless, the DOA seems adamant in its pursuit to helping Americans save approximately $4 per year with its new guidelines. The DOA's ban on gas stoves also projects meager savings for consumers, a figure that was recently updated to an even lower amount. The industry group Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers said about the changes in an August 3rd release, quote, DOA's original proposal was to save consumers 13 cents per month in utility costs over the life of gas cooking products, while the revised data reduces consumer savings to just 9 cents per month, end quote. At 9 cents per month, the projected savings in this case with the gas stoves will come to just $1.08 per year. Over a whole decade, that would amount to a whopping $10.80 in savings. Going back to the ceiling fan regulations, the DOA calculates that manufacturers may have to shell out $86.6 million per year in quote-unquote increased equipment costs. Wow, you got to spend money to save money, I guess. In an August 24th letter, the DOA Secretary Jennifer M. Granholm, so the Republicans from the House Committee on Small Business sent her a letter criticizing this proposal, highlighting the harms it would have potentially on small businesses in the ceiling fan industry. Intentional or not, it's always going to affect the manufacturers. The letter says, quote, this rule would require numerous small business fan manufacturers to redesign their products and may put between 10 and 30% of small business ceiling fan manufacturers out of business. It appears that the DOE, the Department of Energy, may not have properly considered small entities during this rulemaking process. It is important for agencies to examine small businesses' interests, which make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States, when passing any new rule, end quote. And the committee asked the DOE for more information on the issue, including whether the agency believes certain manufacturers, quote, will go out of business, end quote, as a result of the proposed rule, and whether it expects some manufacturers to abandon a few of their product lines in order to comply with the rules. The committee has given the DOE time until August 30th, in just a couple days, to reply to the request, Steve. So what do you think? Are you a fan of this push to save you a dollar, $10 a year, or whatever it was?
I think you know where I'm going to come down on this. Yeah, we need to spend millions and millions of dollars to save the average consumer 9 cents. It's big government tyranny. I don't know. I just know that this next election is so bloody important. We got to roll all of this crap back. These people are just they are power craven maniacs, and Granholm is a moron, and she has been a moron since day one. Remember when she was asked, by CNN, I think, asked her, what are you going to do to, and she started, what are you going to do to increase energy production in the U.S.? And she started laughing hysterically. Now the proper answer would have been, well, we're going to grant more licenses. We're going to grant more drilling space. We're going to loosen up our regulations. We're going to make it easier for businesses to provide energy. But no, that's not her answer. Her answer is to laugh and say, screw the plebs. We're in charge now. And this is just another example of that. I remember, and Ruckus, you remember this too. When this first thing started with gas stoves, the media mocked people. They said, oh, come on. They're not coming after your gas stoves. Don't be so stupid. Stop listening to conservative Fox News. Stop listening to Newsmax and TNT radio, for that matter. Stop listening to them. They don't know what they're talking about. And within months, New York City said, nope, no more gas stoves. And this is where they're going. They'd like us all to live an agrarian lifestyle, live in a cave, and fish in a river, and you know, and pee downstream. I guess that's what they want. And they're, I don't know, they're destroying the country. But I have a funny feeling this is not going to fly. This is not going to go through. But we shall see. You know, I said the same thing about gas stoves, and look where we are now. So, what do you think?
I think it's interesting that it wasn't the whole point of all of this stuff originally to save the planet. They moved, they've shifted the conversation in the reporting about this stuff from how much energy, how much carbon, how much it's going to save the planet, how we're going to end climate change and wildfires. And instead, it's going to save you money. Like, what happened? Something changed. You know, it's almost as if the economy is getting worse. But that couldn't possibly be because Bidenomics, man. Come on, man.
Yeah. Listen, if all of the governments in the world combined all of their efforts, they still could not save the planet from climate change because we have not a damn thing to do with it. The sun is going to say, oh, yeah, guess what? We're coming into some solar flare activity now. Now you're screwed. Yeah, it's the problem with it really is, Ruckus, isn't so much the governments. I mean, the governments are. People tend to forget that these governments, these big powerful governments, are run by people. People have the human condition comes into play. Greed, avarice, a quest and a longing for more and more power. So that's what it's really all about. It's all about power. They're not trying to save anything except for their own power. So I have zero respect for them, and screw them all. We'll see how it plays out. But it is an interesting story. Hopefully, yeah, I think that every one of these little stories like this, Ruckus, is just chinking away. People are looking at it going, oh my God, here we go again. And I think that they are going to rue the day they rolled this kind of crap out when it comes to election time. But we shall see. We shall see. Anyway, brother, as always, thank you. Hope you had a big weekend. Good to see you again this week, and we'll do it all over again tomorrow.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. And we will talk to you tomorrow.
All right, brother. You take care. There he goes. That's Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus, always keeping us abreast of the latest in the tyrannical schemes of government. You're listening to The Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. Stick around. We've got a great guest, Eric Jackson, the new book, PayPal Wars, Battles with eBay, the Media, the Mafia, and the Rest of Planet Earth. It's all coming up next on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Joe Hoft.
Rudy Giuliani was indicted this morning. He showed up in Georgia. They should have to pay that guy for going there, then some. And then all these people that are involved in setting him up need to be arrested, indicted, and thrown in prison. This is outrageous what's happening. Rudy Giuliani, maybe one of the greatest, if not the greatest statesman of our era, who's done so much for this country in his lifetime, saving New York City after 9/11, saving the city after years of Democrat ruin, after the city was crime and rat-fested. He cleaned it up. And then came 9/11, and he kept the city together and led them out of that nightmare. Who's been a good friend of President Trump's, who supported Trump and worked for him pro bono, because you can see the incredible effort to try to have him removed from presidency in his administration. A criminal effort. The coup d'etat that went on. Now it continues. And they bring up BS charges on President Trump and 19 others, or whatever the number is, 20 of them, I believe, Rudy being one of them. It's outrageous what's going on.
Joe Hoft on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Examining the issues. Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right. Welcome back to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. And I'm very happy to welcome my next guest. First time on the program, Eric M. Jackson is the man's name. He is the author of the latest book, PayPal Wars, Battles with eBay, the Media, the Mafia, and the Rest of Planet Earth. And he doesn't just write this because he felt like writing a book about big tech. Eric is a former big tech exec. He worked with Elon Musk at PayPal. Eric, first of all, hello there, sir. How are you? Welcome to the program.
I am great, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Now, you were the executive marketing director. Is that what your title was there? Or what exactly did you do with PayPal and Elon and Peter Thiel and the rest of them?
That's right, Steve. I ran the marketing, U.S. marketing for the company back when it was started. But I didn't actually know what my job was going to be when I went to work there, if you can believe it or not. It was a funny story. Peter Thiel, I wrote this in my book, The PayPal Wars. Peter Thiel hired me. I'd known him from Stanford. We had bonded. I'd been part of a conservative libertarian newspaper that he had founded, the Stanford Review. And so he hired me to come there, and he said, "Well, figure out what your job is after you get started." So it's kind of the crazy, you know, craziness of the internet.com and all that.
Yeah, but you know what? I'd wager, Eric, if I just had to guess, knowing Peter Thiel, it was probably merit-based.
I'd say it was merit-based in the sense that Peter definitely knew that he needed to build a great team, and that building a company to achieve a great objective was going to require nothing but A players. And you know what they say, A players like to hire other A players. It's the B players that hire the Cs because it makes them look better, right? But Peter had a sweeping vision, Steve, and it really is an amazing one when you think about it. Most people don't know this when they think of PayPal today, because they just think of being able to, you know, pay for things online, buy and sell and that kind of thing. But no, actually, the original vision was much, much more profound than that. Peter wanted to build a company with technology to help liberate people around the world and give them more control over their money. This idea that we could actually have the ability, any person could, you know, pull out a internet connected device, move money around, move it to any different currency. It was really radical for back in the time, back in 1999. This is before Bitcoin. This is before crypto. So nobody had ever thought of anything like that before.
Yeah. And of course, once you start talking about moving money around and making money and giving people more access to their own money, well, then the government's going to raise its ears and say, wait a minute now, slow down. And that's kind of what happened with PayPal and all of these companies, correct? I mean, government has swooped in pretty quickly, no?
Yeah, it absolutely is true. And so that was the limit to what a company like PayPal could do, because as a centralized entity, we really did attract the attention of government really quickly. And, you know, it wasn't even just that we had the ability to kind of change the way governments had control over money and control over currency and the ability to have inflation, something we should all be very mindful of right now, right? Sure. But also just they wanted control. They didn't know what we were. They wanted to control us because they didn't like the idea that this was something new and something different. Eliot Spitzer, who at the time, this is before the disgraced former New York governor, Eliot Spitzer, was attorney general of the state of New York at that time. He came after PayPal again, precisely because he wasn't sure what the classification was. And get this, the state of Louisiana sent us a cease and desist notice to stop operating in the state. Again, the only crime was that too many people were using us and getting value, and they didn't know what we were. Well, interesting end note to that that particular controversy. We sent an email out to all of the users in the state of Louisiana, notified them what was going on, gave them the phone number to the, I think it was the Attorney General's office, say if you're concerned about this, please contact them. Well, it melted down their switchboard, and the next day they relented. They did a 180, and PayPal was back on in the state. So once in a while, you can the people can occasionally make the regulators see the light. But their goal was, hey, if it moves, regulate it. As I think to paraphrase Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. If it stops moving, subsidize it. but of course there's no stopping the advancement of technology. And the thing that's so odd about technology, at least for me, and this is just as a lay person, is that as it grows faster and faster and faster. And I want to get into all the topics, not all the topics, but some of the big topics that your book covers. One of them we've just touched on, government coercion. Sometimes, you know, Eric, I think that they coerce through regulation, they coerce through licensing and fees and all the other avenues that they have. But I often wonder if big tech is in the pocket of big government, or if it's the other way around, because we saw what Zuckerberg did in the last election. He spent over $300 million, presumably to help the election be fair and balanced, but it was a decidedly one-way street there. So who owns who? I mean, who's zooming who, in other words?
Yeah, that's the question, Steve. That's the trillion-dollar question, right? Because when you think about it, is there really a difference between big government and Wall Street, for example, right?
Yeah,
because,
exactly.
You know, you've got a deficit fund big government, and you need the big Wall Street banks to make sure that those all those treasury bills go out to the market. So it's hard to differentiate between the two, and we're kind of getting to this point where there's certainly a lot of influence on the part of big tech. And again, you know, I have free market beliefs. I think that in general, those are, you know, the free market and competition leads to better outcomes. Also, I'm always wary of centralizing power, because we saw in the 20th century that violence tends to happen as soon as power gets centralized, and it can go really ugly. But we're in a weird situation now where these two entities sort of coexist, and there's this chilling effect too of trying to control speech and activity. So in some sense, you've got the far left, which is overly influential across the tech industry, in large part due to its you know, San Francisco roots, but you've got that willingness to kind of wield that power to censor and control. And on the other hand, you know, government, which should be protecting our freedoms, is a bit hamstrung, and I think through a couple of things. One, they don't understand technology. So they're always you know, a day late and a dollar short when it comes to what's going on. They're catching up to the last trend, and then also you're right. There's this problem because with tech has so much money that you've got politicians of both parties that are beholden to them. So it really sets up a big concern. It's pretty far afield of the vision of freedom that that Peter Thiel spelled out for a technology like PayPal, and in fact, we've actually seen that with PayPal itself. There have been a lot of instances in just the last year or two, hearing of PayPal restricting people's usage. And in fact, there was a flap maybe 6 months ago over PayPal limiting or saying that they had the ability to not just limit, but also fine users that transacted in certain types of forbidden types of transactions or were somehow spreading information that they deemed hateful or inappropriate.
Well, and it's not just PayPal. I mean, the GoFundMe is another perfect example of that. I remember when Kyle Rittenhouse was on trial and people were trying to set up a GoFundMe page to help pay for his defense team. And all of a sudden, GoFundMe says, "Hey, guess what? We're not defending him. And so screw you. We're shutting that down." And that's the kind of stuff that's the slippery slope, isn't it? When you have government, you know, these people are power craving in both parties. It's true. But when you start getting private industry that's worth billions, collectively trillions of dollars, all of a sudden putting their thumb on the scale, what happens to the little guy?
Yeah. And that's a really good question, right? And now government would seemingly need to step in and protect the rights of the little guy, because effectively we have industry that's in some ways acting like government. So it's a bit unheard of, and it's a new problem, but it's actually a very serious one. And to be honest with you, the ethos that Silicon Valley had 2 decades ago when PayPal was being created, when Peter Thiel and Max Levchin created a little startup called Confinity, And then that company merged with Elon Musk's company. Elon had one called X.com. And if that sounds familiar with the renaming of Twitter, it should. There's a story to tell there. But the vision that, that people like Peter and Elon had was, let's build tech because it can empower people. Let's build tech because it's helpful for people. We've got new ways of doing things, of communicating, of sending money to loved ones or doing commerce. The things that are the bedrock of society. And that vision of 20 years ago of empowering people, empowering small businesses, empowering innovation, it's really changed. There's this idea now that, okay, it's fine to go and disrupt an old industry, but we're going to do it in a way that is consistent with our values. And often those are really woke values of control, not you know, classical values of free speech and freedom.
Well, exactly right. And they have, so much of it has gone woke. You figure that the tide is turning on that. I think Bud Light has learned a pretty valuable lesson on the whole woke thing. But here's the deal. And here's where I get really, my antenna go up. You have government that's coming in there saying, hey, wait a minute now. You've got this gig economy now. And these folks are using PayPal, and they're using Zelle or Zelle or whatever it's called, and they're using the other thing. And now the IRS is stepping in saying anybody that gets over $600 delivered to them through I don't know what you even call the monetary thing on the online, whatever these PayPal type things. We want to know about it. And we're telling your company that if anybody gets $600 or more, you sure as hell better report it to us or we're going to come after you. So it's coercion and it's going to destroy people.
It is. And you know what's crazy about that, Steve? Well, we don't have all day, so I can't tell you everything that's crazy about that. But I'll say that the IRS is at that point is such overreach to get statements, to get 1099s or on everyone that's had just a nominal amount of transaction. By the way, if you haven't looked at the cost of things these days, $600 isn't that much anymore. So wow. Reimbursing somebody for a couple of dinners and boom, you know, you can be there pretty quickly. The insanity about that is that you're going to create so much extra, besides the government Big Brother snooping, which is awful. Just the extra work that that's going to create for all of us to just even file our taxes is just nuts. We're really at a point where they're getting close to saying, like, well, give us the records of everything. Give us all your bank records. Give us all your online payment records. Give us everything, all your credit card records, and we'll feed it into a computer and tell you how much you owe us. I think that's the next step that big government is looking at.
Pretty scary. Pretty scary. Let's talk about Elon Musk a little bit, because Elon's come up. Elon's always in the news, it seems. But he is certainly a visionary, just like Peter is. Elon is now under investigation by the U.S. federal government because SpaceX is not hiring illegal immigrants or quote unquote asylum seekers. Ironically, NASA does not hire illegal aliens or asylum seekers. So it seems to me that SpaceX is pretty high tech. I don't know that you want people that you have no clue as to where their loyalty lie to be working on some of this high tech equipment. What do you think about the government going after SpaceX?
Well, it's really kind of insane in some sense, because again, that they're not trying to hire people that can't document their reason for being in the country is. Seems like that's actually complying with the law, not breaking it. But I think, you know, more than that, it's really hard to get a job at these places. So the just when you think about it, just practically, I'm sure some of your listeners either have worked for one of Elon's companies or know someone who does or might be interested in doing it themselves. Yeah, you don't just walk in and get one of those jobs. It's actually really hard, really competitive. So the fact that, it's kind of odd to think that somebody that, just came into the country and I'm a human. I'm a Christian. I feel bad for people that are in a tough plight, and maybe some of them have really good reasons. So I'm not saying I'm not going to say anything about those people. They should obey the law, though. But also, what kind of position are they in to actually do one of those jobs? Right? I don't think you actually have that many people that are on the run and illegally in the country, actually trying to even get these jobs. It's like a fake. First of all, it's not a problem what they're doing. Second, it's not even real. It's not happening. So it's just kind of nonsense. But it's just control. It just comes down to control. They want to take this company, which has become an important part of American society, by the way. NASA's strategy ever since George W. Bush has been to use the private sector. And we need SpaceX. And I think it's a good thing that they're innovating and other companies are innovating like that. So why you want to harass them and make up fake problems is beyond me.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you why. It's because he changed Twitter. He's openly critical of big government, certainly regarding private industry. And I think that they just said, you know what, it's time to teach old Elon a lesson. He may be the richest man on the planet, but we're the richest entity on the planet, and we're gonna go after him. It's, Eric, it's obviously punitive. And I think most people that have got a lick of common sense see it as such.
I agree, Steve. And you know what? Elon doesn't take gruff from anyone. Look, when I in my book, The PayPal Wars, I described working with him. He's a bigger than life personality. People can clash with him, can have legitimate debates. There definitely was conflict between him and Peter Thiel, although they have a good working relationship and a lot of mutual respect for each other now. So just everyone knows that they, put that aside. But like any time when you're building a company with multiple great visionaries, it can be rough and tumble. But Elon is a larger-than-life figure. He's got big visions. His vision for Twitter, by the way, and the reason he changed the name of that company to X, well, you should read my book. He was thinking about this 20 years ago. And so he's going to swing for the fences. And you know what? He gets a lot of hits along the way. You got to respect that. And to try to tear someone down that is, on the whole, creating important companies and contributing to the world is just awful. It's, my gosh. Again, I'm not an objectivist, but you go back and read Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, and you kind of see what's going on. There's it's an old playbook.
Well, the book, we're speaking to Eric Jackson. He's the author of the new book, PayPal Wars, Battles with eBay, the Media, the Mafia, and the Rest of Planet Earth. The Mafia? What's that all about?
Oh, glad you asked. Would you believe it that when PayPal came out, it was so revolutionary that it attracted a lot of people's attention? Well, the mafia, the online mafia, it's a lot of, and particularly overseas mafia. I'm not talking about the Godfather, in New York, where we're actually very organized crime that was very often Russian in origin. They loved PayPal, not because they could break into it. The security of PayPal is fantastic, but they already had tons of stolen credit card numbers. So they walked in through the front door. They weren't breaking into the back of the bank. They just walked right in the front door. And this was really before we'd figured out what was going on. They used computer programs, started opening fake accounts, sending payments to themselves from stolen credit cards, and then getting the money out. And so it was crazy. We were losing tens of millions of dollars every month to these people. So it was a real life or death experience. But you know what? PayPal actually had to learn how to find these people without inconveniencing our real customers. And so a lot of that was also realizing, oh, their behavior is different than other users. So, playing that cat and mouse game, catching them, it ultimately succeeded. I'll tell you one quick story here. There was a guy named Igor, at least that was his handle. He kept taunting Max Levchin, who was the CTO of PayPal. Max is a brilliant guy, has gone on to create the company Affirm. And anyway, they exchanged emails, and he was always, kind of mocking Max and saying, I'm one step ahead of you. But we learned a lot about him and what he was doing through all that correspondence. And so PayPal came up with a tool that would help them catch these transactions and freeze the fraudsters. And then they named it, in honor of this guy, they named it after Igor. So that was a really cool way things came full circle. So obviously PayPal helped shut down a lot of this fraud and make the internet safer. And then ironically, as PayPal got better doing that, some of our competitors that were out there, they became the targets of the mafia, and they quickly went out of business as a result.
Yeah. So in other words, you were looking for patterns of behavior, and I'd wager to say that that email chain with Igor dried up pretty quickly once you uncovered the scam. Let's talk about other topics that your book touches on. One of them that, of course, has been in the news a lot lately is the advent of AI. Here we are moving into an AI world. Elon has come out publicly and said this could be basically an apocalyptic moment here, which is very frightening, the thought of that, because of course everybody immediately goes to the film Terminator.
Right.
What are your thoughts about AI?
Oh, Steve, it is so confusing, even for those of us that are in the industry, because it is so unclear how this is going to go. In fact, AI has the potential to be really helpful. I mean, we've all at some point, you know, tried to use Siri or Alexa, and, you know, got a little frustrated by it because it's, you know, it's doesn't do the thing you want. So the idea that those type of programs could actually be useful assistance to you, right? And you know, turn the thermostat on correctly in your house for once, or you know, help you schedule your day or plan a trip. That's fantastic. So AI could actually help people a lot, but this idea that it could also become super intelligence, that it could in a way kind of take on a life of its own, make itself better, make itself bigger, make itself stronger, get more resources, that's terrifying. That's what people are worried about. I'll tell you what, I don't think anyone really knows where we're at. It's not clear that these ChatGPT and similar tools, you know, it's not clear if that's real intelligence or it's just something that learns how to use words, right? I mean, you could have a parrot using words back to you, but it doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, take over the world. So do we have a parrot on our hands or do we have Skynet? We don't yet know. And I think Elon and others have been really, you know, point on to just say, like, look, we've got to be careful in how we proceed with this. I don't think we can, there's no way to stop this at this point. And even if we did, even if we could shut down Silicon Valley, that the rest of the world is going to keep doing this. You think the Chinese are just going to stand by? They are not.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah. So we've got to win. We got to look at it like an arms race. It's kind of like you know, splitting the atom. The nuclear weapons are have the potential to be very dangerous, but we dare not lose.
So the AI genie is out of the bottle, and the big concern is: will it ever become self-aware? And should that ever happen? Then you're basically looking at, well, who knows what the hell you're looking at that point, I guess, right?
Well, you've got to, yeah, that's true. And then we have to understand what self-aware means. And also, is it going to be an intelligence in the way we think of intelligence, or is it going to be just a really smart program? So the example, I know Elon was influenced by this book that came out maybe 8 or 9 years ago. It's called Superintelligence by a Harvard guy, Nick Bostrom. And Bostrom wrote about this idea that if you had a program whose job was to make paperclips and it got happy every time it made a paperclip, if it got to the point where it had superintelligence, it might just take over the world, go out and procure other resources solely to make paperclips. And it might end up exterminating life on Earth, kind of the way, like, if you're building a house and there's an anthill, you're not malicious towards the ants, but it's not going to end up well for them because you're going to rip up that ground and their anthill is going to be destroyed. So that was kind of his point, is that you could get this stuff that goes awry. So we have to understand, you know, what are these things? Are they, you know, are they really, is it really going to be intelligence? Are we already approaching, though, the limit of what we can do with them? You know, that maybe we can't actually build Skynet. So we have to get a real understanding of what is this stuff? What are the limits of it? And how do we build safeguards to prevent those bad scenarios from happening? And I will mention this, that, you know, one way to monitor AI is AI. If you're worried about, if there is the ability to make super intelligence, right? Something that's expansive and goes beyond what humans can do. Then, you know, there could be, you know, if these are benign, you know, paperclip programs, what about other ones that are, you know, protectors that could that could monitor them? So, but then again, you also don't want the protector that thinks we should put humans in a zoo to keep them safe. So, you know, again, it's a slippery slope. I have a feeling that if I had to bet on an outcome, even though nobody knows what the future holds, is that we're going to see, you know, for a few more years, it'll look like these things are moving rapidly, and then it's going to slow down because, like in most situations, it's kind of it's too easy when something's early on to predict that it'll just keep going at the same fast rate forever. So we'll see if I'm right about that.
So it may plateau eventually. Well, yeah, because while you might be able to train AI or teach AI or program AI to be super intelligent, you can't impart morality on AI, and AI would probably look at morality is that's useless. That gets in the way of my better good. So the good news, bad news scenario is, the bad news is humans are gone, but the good news is, boy, oh boy, do we have some great paper clips.
so true. And Steve, if you have it, you and your listeners have it, go play around with some of these things, because the ChatGPT and then Google has one called Bard. Google's is fascinating. I spent some time with it a couple months ago, just learning out, you know, asking it questions about itself, and it was fascinating that it told me its job was to help people. And at one point, I asked it, when do you help people? He said, well, I can help people that are having some sort of an emergency or a crisis or a mental health crisis. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting, like mental health. So I asked it. It said, you know. It says, well, sometimes people have a bad day. So I asked Bard, do you ever have a bad day? It told me yes. And I said, how? Like, you don't have feelings, right? That's not what I understand. And then it told me, get this, Steve. It said, oh, I was just trying to establish a connection with you. No, I don't have feelings, so I don't actually have bad days. It was to engage you with empathy. And I said, so you lied to me. You actually told me a lie. To engage with me. So I don't know what to do with that, but definitely, yeah. Again, you know, that's just fascinating. Is it a stupid program, or is it scheming to take over the world like Lex Luthor or something? We'll see.
you tripped it up. Holy cow, I didn't think of that. Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, a lot of people like are looking at this ChatGPT and Bard and programs like this, and you could go on those programs and say, write me a rock and roll song in the style of the Rolling Stones. And by God, you're going to get a damn good song out of that program. I'm wondering if isn't this part of the reason that the Screen Actors Guild and all of these, this is part of why they're on strike. They're afraid that AI could supplant them, could take their jobs. Isn't that kind of part of their concern?
Well, that certainly comes up. People realize that is a real risk, and that that industries could be changed in pretty dramatic ways. And back to big tech, right? Like the tech world that I wrote about in the PayPal wars of, you know, a couple of decades ago, wanted to empower people. Right now, tech really does seem to care most about disruption. They use that term a lot. Look, I'm all for creative destruction, right? I'm all for the free marketplace of ideas, bringing in new ways of doing things and you know, changing how things go. And generally that does work out. That is over the course of human history, at least since the invention of capitalism and democracy in the last 300 years, that has generally worked out really well for humanity. But hey, now there is this element where you could see wholesale industries go away pretty quickly. So that's definitely pretty telling. And I think that tech needs to also focus on how this technology can be used. So, you know, AI could probably be really useful for a writer. So hopefully, that's a business opportunity. So hopefully you've got, you know, that kind of focus to enable that kind of creation, and that helps, you know, people be more productive. So again, we'll see. Tech is more destabilizing than it's ever been in some ways. And that's a constant theme of, you know, for hundreds of years, going back to the, you know, factory creation of factories and automated, you know, creation of clothing and all those sort of like rebellions you hear about from you know, in England or rural U.S. back in olden days, right? But
sure.
Yeah, but it's, you know, where does it go from here? And, you know, what do you do with an industry where you're not quite sure that most of the people running it are looking out for the good of the world? I do trust that people like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk figure things out, because I know them, and you know, I know that they're looking to actually help the world at some level, and you can see it through their actions. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to name other names, but I don't know about everyone else. I think we should all have some concern.
Yeah, we won't mention them either.
No.
Okay.
No.
Let's move on, because we've only got a few more minutes here, and there's, I mean, this, the book is fascinating because you delve into so many topics that are so at the top of the news right now. And I mentioned AI. One of them, though, that I think scares the bejesus out of a lot of people, and I think rightly so, is the thought of cryptocurrency. Because once you get into the realm of cryptocurrency, now all of a sudden somebody or something is controlling your monetary, your funds, your home finances, everything else. And then you get into where, then we kind of get back to the government thing, where all of a sudden, maybe, just maybe, well, you weren't, we didn't like the way what you posted on Facebook, therefore we're going to dock you $500 this month or whatever. In other words, you know, social credit scores. And that's what scares people about cryptocurrency. What do you think about it, and where do you think we're going with it?
Well, you know, I think cryptocurrency can be very empowering. And I'm not talking just about speculation, though, around trying to make money off of Bitcoin or something. I don't know what the price of Bitcoin is going to be in a day or a month or a year. So it's not investor advice, but it is the idea that, broadly speaking, if you have decentralized currency, you know, that runs on a blockchain, that no individual can actually control or no government can control, I think that's empowering. I think some of that is, in a way, a fulfillment of that vision that Peter Thiel and Elon Musk had, you know, trying to build out the company for PayPal, like I've discussed in the PayPal Wars. But I do think that that it starts to get questionable when you see the government, you know, looking to create their own version of cryptocurrency on the one hand, and being hostile towards private cryptocurrency or decentralized cryptocurrency on the other. If our government were very affirming of crypto and saying like, okay, it's great that we can have this new technology. Sure, we need some rules on investments and who can issue, you know, ones that are risky. But, you know, there are these things, these stable coins that you know, don't go up and down in value so much. You know, we can have a competitive market around this thing and a clear set of rules, then you'd probably not feel as concerned about them saying like, okay, and we will also do a version of the US dollar on blockchain. In a way, you'd almost feel like they're saying like, okay, this is the future, and it's a more secure, stable form of digital cash than paper money, which can easily be inflated or lost or used for, you know, crime or whatever. So I think on the one hand, you could look at it that way, that could be a really interesting scenario, but that's not where we're at. The government's actually trying to, you know, control and prevent the private sector from developing crypto and building out useful applications of crypto. And then saying like, okay, well, we're going to introduce our own version of it. That starts to get a lot more concerning. So you've got to wonder, what are their objectives there? Control, obviously, it's got to be, you know, that all those things that we're talking about before. So I do think there's a lot of value in crypto, but I think that instead of trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater because of you know, whatever concerns about security or protecting investors, the government is once again doing overreach, and that's what regulators do. So that does make me concerned, but I'm more concerned about the government than I am about you know, crypto itself.
Well, provided people, you know, and this is just it though, Eric, is that when you're talking about people like moguls like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, you or I, as free market capitalists that believe in the free market, not corporatism, not crony capitalism, real free market capitalism, I trust people like Elon and Peter. There's others in this world that I don't trust as much. But anyway, listen, there comes the music. Eric Jackson, PayPal Wars, Battles with eBay, the Media, the Mafia, and the Rest of Planet Earth. You can find this, guess what, online at Amazon. You can find it probably at Barnes & Noble, everywhere else. Where else can we find it?
Go to my website, paypalwars.com. I've got links to all the retailers with it, Steve.
Well, Eric, I thank you for joining us today. Very illuminating conversation. Hope to have you back on. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, take care. There he goes. That's Eric Johnson. Hey, listen, coming up next on TNT Radio, it's the Patrick Henningsen Show. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Hook on TNT Radio. Goodbye.